Hello and welcome into the Sight and Sound Technology Podcast. My name is Stuart Lawler and this is episode 90. podcast@sightandsound.co.uk is the email address if you'd like to get in touch with us. We always love to hear from you. Great feedback to our last show on Sight Village. And remember, the 8th and 9th of July at the Eastside Rooms in Birmingham is where we'll all be and dying to meet all our customers and friends. Now, coming up on today's show, Matthew Horspool, Code Maintenance Officer with the International Council on English Braille, is with me to talk about that organisation's recent General Assembly. Stay right where you are. Now, the 8th General Assembly of the International Council on English Braille, that's ICEB, has just concluded in Auckland, New Zealand. The event, which ran over 5 days from the 26th of May, discussed everything from Braille learning, all about Braille codes, technology, and much more. And those of us in this part of the world pulled a few all-nighters to join in on the Zoom link and listen in virtually and indeed participate virtually. But someone who's been on the ground in New Zealand for the last week or so, or maybe a little bit longer, is Matthew Horspool, who is Code Maintenance Officer, one of Matthew's many Braille hats with the International Council on English Braille. Matthew, welcome to the show and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Stuart. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, listen, I'm conscious that it's evening time in New Zealand as we talk to you, and you've had 5 days or so of non-stop wall-to-wall Braille. Just before we talk about the conference, will you just give us a reminder for people who may not have heard before of ICEB and what is ICEB?
Sure. So, as you say, ICEB is the International Council on English Braille. It was established around about 1991, around about the time when unified English Braille was starting to become a thing. You know, people had talked about, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could unify the Braille codes, you know, unify the literary code and unify the maths code, and then unify the Braille code around the English speaking world. And ICEB was the body that really got constituted to take forward that piece of work. And so for a long time, ICEB's pretty much sole objective was to develop the Unified English Braille Code. UEB is now very much developed. There's a lot of work still to be done on UEB in terms of emojis. That was one of the things that came up at the conference this week. And, you know, refining the rules a little bit and sorting out a few symbol assignments. And that's really what the Code Maintenance Officer does. But ICEB's job in terms of actually devising the UEB code is pretty much complete now. So ICEB's remit really is to maintain UEB, to monitor UEB, to make sure UEB is still fit for purpose, and then to do a bit more work around international cooperation in the English-speaking world about, you know, making sure that countries are working together on standards beyond just UEB. You know, is there collective work that can be done around, around other things? And also, international efforts to promote Braille. It was two centuries of Braille was the theme of this year's General Assembly, for example. What are countries doing to promote two centuries of Braille? So it's a good forum for the exchange of ideas and the exchange of enthusiasm, really.
Okay, so five days, or I think just about 5 days of Braille at a General Assembly like this, they only take place every 4 years. What sort of things happened this year? And I know we'll talk about maybe some papers in a sec, but in general, there were some, I know there was lots of presentations from different groups and subgroups of the organization. Can you take us through just a little bit about what happened?
Yeah, so you kind of need to think of it a bit like an AGM. Most national charities or local charities would have an annual general meeting once a year, where you present the accounts, you hear what's gone on, and you set the policy for the year ahead. A General Assembly is very similar to that, but it only happens once every 4 years. And I think part of that is because It involves a lot of travel. You know, there are seven countries that were represented. In fact, eight countries, because we've got a new country now. There were eight countries represented at the General Assembly: Australia, Canada, Ireland, Nepal, New Zealand, South Africa, the United Kingdom, and the United States. And we did it in a hybrid model this year. But if you imagine in years gone by, asking all of those countries to meet in person every year is a bit much. So every 4 years is kind of where it landed. But it's the same sort of idea, really. Yes, there were all the committee reports that you'd normally get at an AGM. There was the treasurer's report. And then there were other things that happened to make the assembly a bit more interesting. So there was a good long discussion about setting priorities for where the UEB code maintenance should go next. There was a good discussion about ICEB membership and how do we attract more members and how do we attract more funding and that sort of thing. And there were updates from other interested stakeholders. So there was an interesting update from the World Blind Union about the World Braille Council and things like that. And the Marrakesh Treaty, and then there were some academic and user experience papers and some technology demonstrations and that sort of thing.
Okay, and we'll come back to the papers in a couple of minutes. I wanted to flag one of the big pieces of work that I know you've been spearheading for the last two or so years, and that's the new UEB rulebook. And people might say, oh God, a rulebook, it doesn't sound the most exciting thing, but it's actually crucially important and in some ways is one of the foundations on the key pieces of work that the organization does or has been tasked with. Can you tell us a little bit about the rule book?
Absolutely. So the rule book is the definitive source of rules, hence the name, of Unified English Braille. So you wouldn't normally learn UEB from the rule book. You'd normally learn it from a Braille teacher or a Braille teaching, you know, course of some description, a website or a self-study course. Those courses will be based on the rules of Unified English Braille, the UEB rulebook, and that was last updated in 2013. Now, I need to reassure people at the outset, we're not changing Braille yet again. You know, I know there was a lot of anxiety when we first brought in Unified English Braille. This is absolutely not on this scale at all. The Unified English Braille that we had before the third edition of the rulebook is very much the same as the Unified English Braille that we have in the third edition. But over time, some things emerged that it was felt needed to be clarified, needed to be strengthened. A few things needed to be updated because they'd just been implemented just slightly wrongly. A good example of this is Sight and Sound sells a product called the Braille Sense. That's capital Braille, capital Sense, all one word. And should you be allowed to use the Braille contraction, you know, the BRL contraction, in the word Braille Sense? Well, it's been understood for quite a long time that you can use the Braille contraction in Braille Sense, but the rules of Unified English Braille were not terribly strong around that. So it wasn't clear from reading the rules whether the word Braille, that the Braille contraction should be used. And so it was really changes like that, just to clarify things, just to make things a bit clearer, and just to, you know, obvious things that we all thought should have been there anyway were put in there.
So, I suppose it's important to have a rule book. You know, I guess for those of us who are using a UEB all the time, there's still times you'll go, oh, how can I write this? Or what's the syntax for doing this? And that's where the rule book is really useful, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a reference book. As I say, it's not a teaching book, but as a reference book, it's very useful because it covers all the edge cases. You know, you could say, well, when can I use this sign? And a teaching book will tell you, you know, broadly speaking, where you can use this sign, but you'll end up with a word. And I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but you'll end up with a word and you think, actually, how do I contract this? How do I use, you know, how do I write this correctly? Where should I use this sign? Am I allowed to use this sign here? And the rule book is really where you would go to get the definitive answer about that.
Okay. And as you said, UEB, the Braille code is always changing, just as language and print code changes, Braille code changes, new words come in. So we have to be able to take account of those things.
Absolutely. And the objective of ICEB and the objective of UEB is to be able to make those changes in a very agile manner so that we don't have a situation where everybody got very comfortable with their Braille and then, you know, every sort of 20 or 30 years or so, there's, you know, a mammoth amount of changes to the Braille code. We're trying to make those changes, you know, in line with print as we need to, so that it's not such a jarring thing. They're not all coming at once.
Okay. Now, you mentioned papers that were presented as part of the conference. And one of them that I know we were chatting about just before we started this little talk was around UEB Online. So sticking on a UEB topic for a sec. And UEB Online have made some changes to the delivery of their content with an exam. Is that right?
Yeah, kind of. They've more like added an extra bit of content on. So UEB Online for a long time has been an excellent way, and predominantly, I think, for sighted people to learn UEB. But it's also been a really good way for even totally blind people to get a certificate in Unified English Braille. The problem is that all of UEB Online up until fairly recently has been course-based. So you go through a series of lessons. You have an edit box where you can type in Braille the answers to the lessons. And as soon as you make a mistake, it gives you an error message or an error beep, and you can't continue until you correct your mistake. So this is a great learning tool, and you get a certificate at the end to say that you've gone through all of the lessons of the learning tool. But because it's, you know, giving you an error beep and you can't proceed until you've fixed your error, it's not really testing how competent you are. It's just testing how resilient you are in terms of correcting all of your errors, right? So what they've done now is, in addition to the UEB courses on UEB Online, they've now got some UEB exams where the big difference is you'll be given a passage of text to transcribe into Braille. It's a fairly lengthy passage of text to transcribe into Braille. You do it on the computer, but it won't give you an indication of when you've made an error until the end. So you'll transcribe, say, 1500 words, and then you'll press submit, and then it will give you a mark based on how well you've done, and then you'll be able to buy a certificate if you get, say, above 70% or so. So this is a much more robust way. If you needed to test somebody's competency in UEB, if you needed to say, right, you know, this person is about to become a Braille transcriber, or, you know, about to do something with Braille, you know, if you're a local resource center and you want to test that your Braille volunteers are able to teach Braille, you can't take a QTVI qualification because they're not teaching in a school, but you need a qualification of some sort. This is where these UEB Online exams would really come into their own, I think.
Okay, and great to know that something like that has been added into the UEB Online course. As you say, it's extremely popular. I know lots of people in this part of the world taking advantage of that as well. Matthew, the topic of tactile diagrams, 3D printing, I know there was a lot of talk about that at the conference. It always tends to come up. Anything exciting that you want to report on?
There really was, actually. We saw a lot of examples. There was a show and tell table at the conference, and there were a lot of examples of various people's attempts at 3D printing. I actually, on the way into the ICEB conference, stopped off at Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, where Leona Holloway is doing a lot of research into tactile diagrams and 3D printing, and she was showing me some very exciting things to do with maps of buildings on multiple floors. And they actually had a map of each floor separately that had been 3D printed, and they stacked them one on top of the other so that you could actually see the relationship, you know, floor by floor. And so there were lots of very interesting demos like that. They were particularly interested this year in how tactile diagrams might be rendered on multi-line graphics displays, because one of the things that's not obvious, you know, or it's so obvious that you don't notice it, is when you're producing tactile diagrams, you can use different textures to show different things. So you could have a hollow texture and a filled in texture, for example. And there were some questions around how tactile graphics displays that are entirely dotty graphics might be able to show that. If you're showing a graph, for example, how do you show the difference between the grid lines and the actual data line if it's a line graph? You can't do it so easily by line thickness because it's all just dots and it's all just one thickness. So there were some interesting research papers presented about that. There was also some quite unique stuff happening at Clovernook Center for the Blind in the United States. They brought lots of very interesting tactile things to show. The thing that caught my attention was they're doing a lot of work around QR codes. It's very difficult to make a tactile box around a QR code without obscuring the QR code and making it difficult for the phone to actually scan it. But what Clovernook have done is that they've put dots in all four corners of the QR code box. So it's just a dot in each corner. So it's not a line. So the phone doesn't get it confused with the QR code itself. But you as a blind person know how big that QR code is, what the orientation of the QR code is, and therefore know or have a better idea of where to point the camera, what direction to point the camera in, how far away does the camera need to be, all of that sort of thing.
That's something that I think we could all, will help us all. I've had many times struggling to capture QR codes. Now, going back to the General Assembly and the maybe the formalities for a second, one of the areas that happens towards the end of the General Assembly are the resolutions. And I suppose these are tasks that are going to guide the work of the organization for the next 4 years. And there were six or seven resolutions, six, I think, that were put forward to the floor. Any of those grabbed your eye as being particularly interesting and maybe things to watch for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were all interesting in their own way. Otherwise, we wouldn't have put them forward as resolutions. I guess I should perhaps just go quickly through them in turn. There was a resolution to do with mathematics. We know that certain screen readers only support Nemeth mathematics input, for example. And so there was a resolution to try and support UEB input. Along those lines, there was another resolution to do with supporting UEB input in all areas so that some screen readers will switch back to computer braille from time to time. And there was a resolution to suggest that that shouldn't happen and that any necessary updates to braille tables should be made in order to make that happen. There were a couple of resolutions to do with braille music and reference documents to try and standardize international formatting of braille music. A resolution to update the Wikipedia articles on Braille to make sure that they're still fit for purpose and, you know, say what we want them to say rather than Braille is dying out. You know, we need to update them to show that Braille is a living code. There was a resolution about something called the Accessible Books Consortium, which is a way primarily for libraries to exchange books amongst each other. That end users can also access things sometimes through the Accessible Books Consortium, but basically a resolution to say we should strengthen links between international libraries through the Accessible Books Consortium, and that, you know, if a library isn't signed up, then it should be so that other countries can get each other's titles more easily. And again, going back to mathematics and chemistry and things like that, there are some symbols that are present in the Nemeth code that are not present in UEB. And so there was a resolution to try and invent those missing symbols in UEB.
Okay. And again, watch this space, because all those areas of focus will be reviewed over the next couple of years, and people will be able to find out what's happening with each of those. Matthew, as we kind of, I suppose, come towards the end of our little chat, and I suppose in a way you've been answering this all along, but Is an event like this, 5 days of Braille, is it worth it? Is it still important to have these major meetings, I suppose, all over the world? Is it important to be there? Is it important to just live Braille like that for a couple of days?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a balance to be struck, right? Like, I mean, I think 4 years is about the right amount of time to do it, but I definitely think it's important to do it. I've been working with some of the people in ICEB now for at least 4 years, some of them even longer than that, you know, some of them more like 8 years. I've been working with all these people, and I've never actually met them in person. And I've spoken to them on Zoom, and that's really very nice, you know, but it's not the same as actually getting together with them in a room and sitting down and having a proper conversation. And I feel like I know my colleagues a lot better for having had the meeting in person. I've met so many interesting people. I've seen so many interesting things. And I suppose for Braille in particular, I've felt so many interesting things. It's one thing to hear a paper about something or to, you know, to hear a description of something. It's another thing to actually get your hands on it and feel it. And, you know, really, for somebody who can't see, you know, it's not like we can look at a picture of it. You know, we've actually got to see it. And there was so much of that that happened during the week that I it was just such a valuable week. I'm really, really pleased I went.
Well, Matthew, we're delighted that you went because you've been able to give us a really great snapshot of what it was like. Pulling all-nighters was definitely not the same, I can assure you, as sitting in the conference room. But thanks a million for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your travels and safe trip back. We look forward to catching up with you maybe at Site Village. But until then, Matthew, stay safe and thanks a million.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Stuart.
My thanks to Matthew Horspool there for joining us and really giving us a great snapshot of the ICEB General Assembly. I think it was three overnights consecutively and then worked during the day. So really bad idea. I should have taken a bit of time off during the ICEB conference, but it was great to hear from Matthew what it was like in the room, so to speak. And more information, by the way, on the International Council on English Braille at iceb.org. But that's all we have time for. Until next time, from Stuart Lawler and everybody at Sight and Sound Technology, thanks for listening. Goodbye.